if she's coming to you saying, I'm afraid to bring this up with my guy because he's going to get insecure about it.
Right.
How might she do that tactfully?
Well, we would talk about doing that in a safe place. So you're certainly not going to say it like, we just had terrible sex. And by the way.
At a dinner party.
Yeah. And by the way, you can't give me this kink. You can't give me what I need.
Hello. Welcome to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm Lisa Thomas.
I'm Jen Siegel.
And I'm your host, Ben Robbins.
This is a show where we discuss everything from weird sex stuff
to online dating
to the challenges.
Challenges of having kids and raising a family.
By the way, we each have two kids and we probably wouldn't listen to this podcast with them, but that's your call. Listener discretion is advised.
Lisa and Jen met on the first day of graduate school and have been friends ever since. For the last decade, while Lisa was running a sex therapy practice, Jen was raising her kids at home.
And Ben is just a guy who started a podcast because
he didn't want to pay for marriage counseling.
Cheap bastard.
Welcome to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. I'm here with licensed sex therapist Indigo Stray Conger. Licensed marriage and family therapist Indigo Stray Conger. Hi, Indigo.
Hi.
How have you been?
I've been awesome. How are you?
I'm doing fairly well. Looking forward to figuring out how to make these incompatible relationships work.
Yeah.
We'll
solve it this hour.
It's interesting. We have done a show similar to this one. We did a show on desire discrepancy, which I feel like maybe is a little bit more about libido.
Yeah.
And typically, I mean, we dealt with both. There are women with higher desire, higher sex drive than their male counterparts.
And sometimes weird shame about that if that's the case, because it's not the stereotype.
Right, right. And today we're talking about a kink discrepancy.
Yep.
Where, I mean, maybe desire is a component of that, but it's really sort of about how to introduce your kink to the relationship when you might have more of it than your partner.
Yeah, and one thing that happens is that often these things don't get introduced until way down the line into the relationship, either because of shame and not wanting to bring it up, or it hasn't become a fully formed desire for you yet, this person who has this kink. And so once you bring it to the table, there can definitely be a feeling of, what the hell? This wasn't part of our agreement. What are you talking about?
Yeah. You know, I'm, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the Adult Baby Diaper Lover show we did a very long time ago with Dr. Rhoda Lipscomb. And one of her points was that really the people she's counseling the most are the partners of the people who are into it. You know, it's...
Yeah, it's, letting them know that their partners aren't broken, that there's nothing horribly wrong with them because they want this. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, how do I navigate this thing that apparently is a deal breaker in my relationship? But it really, it's a broad spectrum. I feel like we could be talking about anything from like some weird blood play sex stuff or like non-monogamy.
Yeah.
Even seems like it could sort of fall under this.
Yeah. It's a spectrum both of intensity of these kinks and also a spectrum in terms of how specific they are. So sometimes it's a vague sense of something that you really want to bring into the room, some dominant submission. Sometimes it's a very specific, I want you to say this, I want you to hit me here.
Right. And maybe something you brought from a previous relationship. It seems like maybe a little bit different. I'm thinking of sort of as a guy here, I'm trying to imagine a girl saying, I want to do all this weird stuff that you're going to think is weird, but I really got into it with the last guy. And not only am I insecure about it in the first place, but it's like something else this last dude did really well.
Yeah, that can add to the insecurity for sure.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking about the other side of that. When you have a kink or a fetish that's really a deal breaker or something that you feel is mandatory for your sexual health.
Yeah, that a true fetish is something that you absolutely need in order to get off. And we use the term fetish a little more broadly oftentimes when we talk about kink, that it's something that is just exciting or it adds to the fun in the relationship, but it's not necessary. So a deal breaker is certainly if someone comes to their partner and says, I absolutely need this or we're not really going to be sexually compatible.
Right. We are sort of talking, maybe not in direct reference to, but we discussed a Vice article, by Sophie St. Thomas. It was called How to Make Sex and Relationships Work When Only One of You is Kinky. The article, made the point of asking, do relationships equal sex or vice versa? Does sex automatically equal a relationship?
Right.
And I think that's interesting to question, because we so traditionally just assume that they're sort of codependent in a way, that you can't have sex without having the relationship. I mean, I think that's sort of the fundamental question in non-monogamy. Can you have intimacy without sex, and can you have sex without intimacy?
Yeah, the whole world of alternative relationships, whether you're talking about kink or consensual non-monogamy or the crossover between the two, is a world where there's a lot more communication about what do we actually want in this relationship, instead of just assuming, okay, we're into each other, that means we're going to eventually move in together, it means we're going to have sex, and we both have our ideas about how much sex that's supposed to be, and it's mostly going to be PV, penis-vagina sex, and we're just going to do it without talking about it, and that's right. Our sex life.
Right. And that was, unfortunately, and still is, I think, for a lot of people, the norm, you know, that it's that idea that you have to make one person your everything, that one person you marry, that's where you get everything you need in life, including your sex.
Mm-hmm.
And
also that sex is supposed to basically look vanilla.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And if you need anything beyond that, you just sort of suck it up. And I think I think of it as more of a traditional approach or attitude, but I think when you hear someone say, you know, you made your bed, so now lie in it. And the thought that people do that with their relationships is really kind of a waste, in my opinion.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, quite possibly the vanilla world made you really happy for 10, 20 years, and someone wants to bring something else into the relationship, try something that's kinky in some way. And just that can be shocking, but it can also open up a whole new world of communication and closeness and excitement that had kind of died off after 20 years.
I mean, and that seems mandatory in my mind for keeping a relationship healthy. I would love to hear from a vanilla couple that's been married for 50 years that is still happily having vanilla sex.
Yeah.
Right? It seems like there's sort of a natural evolution that happens with that stuff. And in some cases with couples who use, you know, non-monogamy as a solution.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, sort of exploring the kink together. Sometimes there's just a departure and it's like, you go do your thing. And we can still have a romantic relationship outside of that.
Yeah. And those are the two real main options that we could talk about today, is how can you explore it in your relationship and find that place of compromise if the kink seems like too much to engage in as it is? Or are you going to say, I give you a free pass to go do this with someone else? But there's a big difference between saying, this is just not my thing and I'm okay with you going to explore it with someone else, and saying, ew, gross, I don't like this part of you, go do this thing, but don't tell me about it. And I wish it wasn't there.
Yeah. And as I was reading this, I was really feeling a little bit triggered, not for any specific reason, but just having these thoughts of like rejection around the vulnerability that you're expressing. You know, when you have this thing that's maybe you're ashamed of, or it's non-traditional, whatever that is, just bringing that up for the first time.
Yeah, it's really brave to do that. And oftentimes, unfortunately, the partner, as sensitive as they might want to be, their first reaction, even if it's just a look on their face, a slight momentary look of disgust or surprise, that's enough to shut things down for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And that doesn't feel good for either person.
Right.
And so it's one thing to think about. In fact, it's really nice to think about a couple that does work through this together, whatever that solution looks like.
Yeah.
I'm pleased to think that there's solutions for people that work.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to hear, we'll save this for later, but I'm curious to hear about your personal practice and what sort of couples you've worked with, or singles that have, you know, where this has been a challenge in the relationship.
Absolutely. And I've worked with couples that I've guided them for sure. But oftentimes I'm surprised with the solutions that they come up with that end up working for them.
Oh,
because
really?
every couple, every relationship is really different in terms of what is going to be okay. What's a soft boundary? What's a hard boundary? What's going to work?
I think our listeners are also interested to hear in much more explicit terms what we're talking about with some of these
things.
Maybe
we should get into that.
The real fun is in describing this weird sex shit that people are judgmental of.
Sure. And I think one of the reasons it's tough to be specific is it really is so broad. And again, there's that spectrum of specific behaviors or activities that you like to do, and things that are more wide ranged. But just taking one for example that can often be shocking for people is age play. If someone says, I really, really want to call you daddy. I really want to be a little girl. I want you to take care of me in some way. And this can be sexually, it can be domestically. And all kinds of thoughts can go across someone's mind if they hear that, right?
Sure.
Okay, well, does that make me a pedophile then? If we engage in this, what does that mean that you want this?
Right.
Does this mean you're not a fully functioning adult? None of those things are true, but there's a lot to talk about in terms of whether or not that's going to be okay in the relationship, what that looks like, when the boundaries are for when that's happening. Is it just in the bedroom? Or is it outside the bedroom?
You know, it's funny. I had an encounter around that once where I thought from our online interaction that this woman was just saying, you know, I want to call you daddy, sort of in an innocent dom sub kind of dynamic, which sounded fine, you know, that's every guy's fantasy. And until the pictures start coming through, and it was like her in like little girl's Hello Kitty pajamas coloring with coloring books. Like, it was really a role play for her.
Yeah.
And I have two little girls. And I'm so ready for them to grow up, you know? It's like, I don't need a third one. And I know that's kind of a cynical reaction, but that was sort of how I felt, you know? Like, I get to play, I get to be daddy all the time.
Yeah,
but that's not really an escape for me.
And that's a good point, is that what is going to be, maybe escape isn't the right word, but what's going to fulfill that need for you both that in a symbiotic way that you're not getting in the rest of your life? So age play, just like with any other kind of dominance and submission, oftentimes, and this is a generalization, dominance aren't having enough control in the rest of their life, and they get to have this place where they have a lot of control.
Yeah.
And submissives, or little girls in the age play scenario, they do have a lot of control. Oftentimes those are people whose lives are very together, and they want to give up that control. They don't want to make those little decisions. They want someone else to do that for them, and that creates such a sense of safety and release.
Yeah. So, for example, what you're saying is that I might be better off if we had an age play where you pretend to be a totally independent pre-med student that's on her way to college that doesn't need anything from me anymore.
Right. And that's kind of the vanilla age play, right? That works for most people. Yeah.
I need to pretend that I'm not taking care of a little girl for a change.
And that's where it is important to know where your edges are and what works and what doesn't. So you just met this girl online. It wasn't a big deal to go your separate ways.
Right.
But if someone comes to you and says that to you who's been in a relationship with you for 20 years, you've got to do something more with that information. You've got to explore, okay, where is this coming from? What is the need that's being filled here? And can I fill that in some way without going past my own boundaries and edges?
And suspend your judgments. You know, I think that's the hardest part is you show up at this. Age play is a great starting point for that. The discussion we had a couple years ago with Rhoda was about how the, you know, adult baby diaper lovers, there's a lot in there, and there's a lot of variety in there.
Yeah.
And I think people hear that and they think scat. That's the first thing their mind goes to, which really is a very small part of that age play typically.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's more about just needing to wear a diaper and act like a baby and crawl around on the ground with a teddy bear. We saw a very extreme example on a TLC, which was a little bit of an exploitative reality segment. But
And that's an unfortunate thing about modern television, right, is that it gets the idea of kink and polyamory and everything else out there, but it does it in the most sensationalist way possible.
Right.
So when your partner comes to you and says they're into this, you immediately think of the TLC special instead of getting curious about what your partner actually means.
That's a good point. That getting curious is an important starting point.
Yeah. And sometimes that happens for partners, that the first reaction when their partner comes to them and says, I want to try this thing, or I'm interested in going down this road with you, even if the first reaction is kind of shocker, I didn't even know that existed or what's going on, oftentimes people try a little bit of it and realize, oh, I get this. I get that sensation play is something that can be powerful for both of us, and maybe I'm never going to be as into it as you are, but I get it.
What did you say shocker as in like the
the violet wand?
No, I was even thinking that either. It's funny, so many of these things trigger memories of what I associate with like Urban Dictionary and like frat boy college fodder of these terms like Dirty Sanchez, Donkey Punch, all these things that were, my memory of those things is from high school and college, and then reading about them on Urban Dictionary, but I don't think they're real acts that anybody has ever done. I feel like they're just jokes for frat parties.
I think so. And if they are acts, they probably have different, they have different names than Dirty Sanchez.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
They're not meant in a goofy way like that.
Yeah.
But that's a good way to start with this too, is that high school and college, there's this demographic that is the mainstream demographic that's again and again in a joking way trying to point people back to vanilla. Vanilla is the right way to be.
Right.
And this is funny over here, but it's funny because it's crazy and no one would ever do it.
Right.
And so that's how we come into our adult lives and get to age 40 without ever expressing out loud that we want this thing, because there's all these tiny little ways that we're told we should be ashamed if we do want something that's not vanilla.
Yeah, I don't know what that's rooted in. I can't even understand the motivation of a person who would want to sort of like limit a person's expression or experience in that way. What is the value? I understand sometimes the value in the thinking around stuff I don't agree with,
mm-hmm.
but the value in vanilla sex I don't understand, mm-hmm. unless it's religious morality that you're really committed to.
Yeah, and I don't even think it has to be religious. I think the vast majority of culture and humans are trying to fit in some way and feel like they belong and feel like they're part of the crowd. And mm-hmm. I think for those of us on the fringes, that seems weird, mm-hmm. But there's a value in that. And so to suddenly have your vanilla life that's going along and feels great, to have mm-hmm. your partner shake it up by saying, this isn't working for me,
yeah.
can shatter you to the base foundation of what you thought everything was all about and what your world was.
And similarly, there is so much identity to be found and community to be had in the kink scene.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's what's mm-hmm. really surprising, is that this really is, for a lot of people, more than what they do on a Friday night. It's really sort of, it's not an alternate reality, but it's like mm-hmm. a safe place to go and be someone else.
And that's something that has come up for me with my couples that come in and say, okay, you go explore this over there. And at first, I think the idea is you're going to get this out of the way on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And then that person finds a safe place, a safe haven, other people who are into whatever it is they're into and excited to explore it with them. You know, like let's say rope bondage. So mm-hmm. we say, okay, you're not going to have sex with these people, but it's okay if you go to rope bite and learn these ties and mm-hmm. have fun. And then the partner that gave that permission suddenly starts to feel on the outside and feel less important, because this whole new world is blossoming for the person that is exploring rope.
I think similar, you know, you mentioned sort of the insecurity that is implicit in that. And I'm wondering if that's similar to a person I spoke with recently who had a long relationship, 10 years, and she and her partner had talked about opening it up. She was interested in opening it up in a way that was like, if you want to go to a sex party or a club and have a fling or have mm-hmm. a one-night stand, that's fine. But I'm not interested in you carrying on a relationship with another person.
Mm-hmm.
Really, we were talking about the difference in polyamory and swinging.
Right.
But for her, it was very much about the threat of being replaced.
Mm-hmm. And that comes up, yeah, with any couples that are exploring this wide range of things, is mm-hmm. oftentimes these rules get created that feel like they're going to keep the relationship safe. And they end up doing the opposite, because you're saying, okay, I'm all right with this part of you, but mm-hmm. I'm only all right with it if you put it in this box over here. And it doesn't have to do with emotions, and it doesn't have to do with anything other than your weird little kink that you need to have every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And life usually doesn't work out that way. So you develop emotions and feelings for people, even if it's on a friendship level in mm-hmm. the play scene, for example. And it gets much muddier than was originally intended.
Yeah.
And you got to navigate that.
I'm all right with you if you put this part of you in this box over here.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting choice of words.
Yeah.
We need to take a quick break. More on how to make things work when only one of you is kinky.
Ah. Ooh. Ooh.
Ah. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. I'm sitting here with Indigo Stray Conger.
Hey.
We are talking about how to make things work when one of you is kinky. I think we discussed this sort of maybe existing in a few categories, like you could just repress it altogether. You discover you have
right.
this kink. This is sort of, all of this is under the implication that you're in a relationship where it's serious enough that's a factor, right? Like right. I mentioned, you know, chatting with someone online and finding out we were sort of incompatible in a big way. This is like where it's a big deal to tell your husband that you don't want a divorce, but that you need to go to a, you know, rope bondage event, for example.
Yeah.
Which means you have the choice to just repress that desire altogether because you think it'll end your marriage. And I guess that leaves you to sort of do some soul searching about how important this kink is to you.
Right.
Exploring it together, assuming it's something that he can get into.
Yeah, and exploring it together can, you can broaden the context of what that might look like. So maybe your partner is never going to be okay being part of the scene or going to play parties, but in the bedroom, they're okay. Mm. Or maybe they don't like any of the accoutrements, leather whips and chains, but they're okay with sensation play or exploring some power dynamics.
And then obviously we have like the open relationship possibility where you say, I'm not into your rope fetish, but go do that just as long as you don't leave me over the scene.
Yeah, and that gets tricky.
That gets tricky, and it also seems like maybe there's a potential for, you know, the bar to be raised or the tolerance to be raised. I could see people getting into this innocently, thinking I'm letting my wife go do this rope bondage thing on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
And maybe the more she gets into it, the more elevated it becomes.
Yeah.
And her participation changes.
Yeah, because it's not like going to crochet club.
Right.
You're doing something that's connecting you on a physical, emotional, sexual, possibly spiritual level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little bit different intensity than crocheting in my experience. And I guess the other possibility is that it's a non-sexual exploration.
Right. So to say a little more about that, oftentimes, particularly let's take submission, for example, it's about the relationship with somebody that's your dom, or it's about the scene that you're in, but it can also be about your relationship with your own body and submitting to your own sensations and dropping into subspace and getting that trance-like quality. And there are other places that you can get that. So for example, some people turn to athleticism or activities, particularly extreme athleticism, or practices like more intense yoga practices can fit into that. So that's not at all to say that that equates with kink. And of course, it depends on exactly what you need. But there are ways that you can explore this relationship with yourself and having that dominant submission dynamic within yourself in a very physical way, even if it doesn't end up being a sexual way.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all the possibilities for this, but it might even just be as simple as getting some rope and learning to tie on yourself.
Right, yeah.
It seems like there's, I mean, it's better than nothing, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I'm more committed to the idea that you guys can like work this out together and you can find a way for the, I mean, effectively what you're doing, and maybe that's why this is a big deal, is you're sort of forced to assess the importance of maintaining the relationship. You know,
right.
It's not just about her interest in doing rope bondage. It's like, how bothered am I by that? How threatened am I by that? How secure am I in this relationship? How much do I want to still be in this relationship?
Yeah.
And that's sort of a lot to address all at once.
It is. And given those two main choices we talked about earlier, if you are going to do this together, to let that outlet be with somebody else or to work on it between the two of you, both of those can create threats. Both of those can create moments where you are unsure of yourself and your own edges. You know, a good example of that is somebody who's really confident that this isn't their thing. They don't want to do it. It's okay for someone to look for it elsewhere. But then they start to feel like, well, I should be the one providing this. Or maybe it's something I'm not able to do, and that means I'm less than. And this person's going to do it with somebody else, and that's what they really want. So they're going to fall in love with that somebody else, and they're going to leave me.
Yeah, and so what are the safeties around that? I mean, how do you talk to that person who admits those insecurities?
Well, it's tough, and I have a couple right now that we're working on this for sure, and they're a strong couple with each other, and they're good at communicating, and they've been working on opening up their relationship for a while. But the opening up the relationship specifically to the dominance and submission is where it still is very emotionally tricky because of that thought that there's going to be a replacement of the person in the relationship. And we've talked about how actually sometimes a DS relationship can be less threatening because in this case, it's the guy who has dominant tendencies. And if he develops a DS relationship, just given the nature of a DS relationship, he can be very clear about what the boundaries are. If he doesn't want his sub to text him after 8 p.m., she's not going to text him after 8 p.m. And if he has specific things that he wants or doesn't want, that's part of the boundaries. Whereas with any other kind of open relationship, you might not be able to make those requests.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating point. If your interested kinky partner comes to you and would like to explore being submissive, you've really got the upper hand from the very beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so we've talked about that and how it can actually create some strength for the woman in the relationship, the initial relationship, and that she has some power to request from her husband that there are certain boundaries in this DS relationship. And we've also talked about aftercare, because we talk a lot about aftercare for subs, but we don't talk that much about top care. And oftentimes DOMs aren't getting that aftercare from their submissive. So that's a way that he can come back to the primary relationship and maybe get that from her in some way.
I've never actually thought about top care.
Yeah, and it's oftentimes tops don't think about the fact that they need top care, and then suddenly one day they have top drop and they're feeling terrible and they don't know why. And there's an intensity to that DS relationship, not just for the sub. It can take a lot out of you in a positive way, but then if you don't have the self-care afterwards, it can be a problem.
So the next question for me, since I'm going to be the guy who has a wife that's just declared her interest in kink, how do I not take her interest in finding this other stuff, which has gotten to the point where it's a big enough deal that we're in therapy over it?
Right.
How do I not take that personally? How is that not, you know, an indictment of my character or
adequacy?
Adequacy. That she has this hole I can't fill. Pun totally intended.
Yeah, it's you have to have a fair amount of ego strength, I think, for any kind of consensual non-monogamy or for exploring your edges. I mean, even just to talk about sex, I feel like you have to have some ego strength to be open and honest in your relationship, let alone to talk about some things that you might have your own reaction to, that they're yucky or scary or whatever. And then certainly if you're going to say, okay, this is an edge for me, and you're going to explore it elsewhere, you have to be really strong and really brave to say, oh yeah, totally, let this guy over there fill that need for you and I'm good. That's a lot.
Well, so to flip the script a little, I guess, how would you counsel the woman in this scenario on presenting this to her husband? What would you say to her, as in, if she's coming to you saying, I'm afraid to bring this up with my guy because he's going to get insecure about it.
Right.
How might she do that tactfully?
Well, we would talk about doing that in a safe place. So you're certainly not going to say it like, we just had terrible sex, and by the way,
at a dinner party.
Yeah. And by the way, you can't give me this kink. You can't give me what I need. So in a place where you're already feeling connected, probably not in the context where you've just had sex or you're going to have sex, but at a time where you've just had a great weekend together, you're feeling generally good about the relationship. You're feeling bonded, and give a little space and time to process. So also make sure it's not you're on the way to the office in the morning. Oh, hey, by the way, honey, here's this thing. Think about it while I'm at work all day. So giving it the space and context is going to be huge in terms of a positive outcome. And then to couch it in terms of, this is something that's come up for me. Talk about where it's come from. Talk about how long it's been there. Talk about why you haven't expressed it before, what has felt scary about it and unsafe, so that that person who's expressing it is coming from that vulnerable place. And then it feels like less of an attack, and it feels like the person who's receiving it can provide something. Even if they're not saying, yes, I can do this kink for you, they can listen and be present and feel like they're included in the process.
Yeah, and I think what I'm wanting to hear as an insecure caveman is that I have an interest in doing this thing, but that's not a judgment on our relationship, or that's not a judgment on your value to me.
Right.
This is like not an either or. This is a both and. Both, I value this relationship, and I want to do this other kinky stuff. And
right,
we're having the discussion because I'm not leaving you because of it.
Yeah.
I think that's like what the, you know, since I'm so happy to volunteer as the insecure male voice in this scenario.
That sounds so good. You're practicing well.
Yeah, I'm wanting that reassurance up front, like, because that's where that's the rabbit hole I'm going to go down, is like self-worth questioning.
Yeah. And both clients are really going down that rabbit hole. So just like any conversation that you're likely to have in therapy or come to therapy for, being able to come from a vulnerable place where your guard is down and where you're really connected is going to be the crucial piece to whether or not you end up fighting and running out the door, or whether you end up holding each other and feeling pretty positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And there really is on this spectrum of potential kink or fetish, you know, play. Mm-hmm. It really could be any number of things. Lisa tells a story about a couple that was, you know, they came to her thinking they might be getting a divorce over this issue. And when he finally brought it up, he was like, I think I really want to try anal.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's fine.
Let's do it.
It was not an issue for her at all. Mm-hmm. He had built it up so much, you know, because of his own baggage around it.
Yeah.
That it was really, in some ways, he was more innocent about it than she was.
Right.
And mm-hmm. certainly not something to get a divorce over. Whether it works out or not, it's not something to get a divorce over. Mm-hmm. And I believe the way that story ended up, they tried it, it went fine. It sort of evolved into him actually being a bottom in a pegging scenario that mm-hmm. involved her. So it really did evolve. But
yeah.
More importantly, it was fine, and they're probably closer for that. You know, that's the jealousy I have around this scene. I'm navigating this stuff as a doughy, middle-aged single dad. Uh-huh. Which is the worst demographic to be in this scene. Really caters to couples and single women. Mm-hmm. But I'm jealous a little bit of the appearance of sort of bonding that happens mm-hmm. through couples exploring this stuff together.
Yeah.
Not to say that there isn't validity in these other methods we've discussed. And something really interesting, I'm sure you saw this in the Vice article, but they had an interview with a couple. All of these couples were like in their early 30s and had been married for like 16 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the math works out on that, but they got married young.
Yeah.
And in one case, they had opened up their relationship and they had basically a sexless marriage in their 30s.
Yeah.
Where each of them was dating other people and getting their needs met outside of the relationship. But they both felt committed to each other romantically and committed to staying in the relationship.
Yeah.
And that's really challenging for me to think about, you know, because why would you stay in?
In that case, too, for them, because they did get married young, a piece of that is that they never really got to explore what they wanted and what they liked in a way that many of us modern single folks who don't get married till their 30s or whatever get to do. And so how wonderful they were able to give each other that freedom and then come back to each other and say, okay, I've had all those trial and errors that I would have had if I'd lived my 20s single, and now I can come back to you and bring the information that I've figured out about myself in these other dating scenarios, sex scenarios, whatever it might be.
You know, I guess depending on the ask, you know, that's probably important to get into as well. Let's take another break, but when we get back, let's get into the sort of the filthy detail on some of this stuff, because I'm thinking of some things very specifically that I would not be willing to dabble in.
Okay, and let's talk about your hard edges.
Let's talk about my boundaries. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. I'm sitting here with licensed marriage and family therapist, Indigo Strake-Honger.
It makes me sound so vanilla, and I'm not.
Isn't that ironic
just
in this context?
Just the license I happen to have.
And I'm so used to saying licensed sex therapist that licensed, and I can see the acronym. I can see the initials in my head, LMFT. Yeah. I just have to think through.
There's a lot of acronyms out there.
Oh, man. And you therapists are the worst about having like 10 of them sometimes.
Yeah. I don't even know what some of my husbands are. He's got like 10 of them after his name.
Is he a therapist too?
He is.
That is interesting. There's no lack of communication in that relationship.
It's true.
It's probably good. Yeah, so you and your husband would not be in a therapist's office saying, I want to do this weird thing, and I don't have any place for that expression.
Probably not, which is great, because I think so many other people would. We're not given those tools, most of us, unless we've collectively been to 6 years of grad school.
Right, yeah. it's the things I'm thinking about, because we've talked about like rope bondage and even some of the stuff I've seen in this BDSM scene here locally. There are things that bother me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not judging anyone for being into blood play. Mm-hmm. I just have a visceral reaction to that, and I can't really watch it.
Yeah,
I can't watch needles. Needles on a table are one thing, but one time I felt really just sort of like triggered and sick because I saw a girl walking around with needles stuck in her leg.
Yeah.
And it just looked like such an accident, you know, like she had been hurt. Uh-huh. But that's not conscious judgment. I just sort of have some boundaries around
that.
Sure,
yeah.
Something that came up in the past week that absolutely changed my life. if you don't know about James Joyce and his dirty letters that he wrote.
I don't, actually.
130 years ago.
They were dirty even back then.
They were dirtier than anything I've ever thought of with my modern, dirty, porn-saturated brain.
Yeah.
It was like a new level of filth that I had never explored, and so eloquently written, and so just like laugh out loud, funny, filthy.
They had to use their words back then.
Yeah, they did.
We don't now.
They did, and I. If you guys are not familiar with this, please Google James Joyce Dirty Letters. And I guarantee when you start typing in James Joyce, one of the Google suggestions
will be
James Joyce fart.
What?
That's actually what you will see, because that is a big part of his kink.
Okay.
And in his defense, you know, back then, first of all, it might have taken his wife a year to get those letters.
Yeah.
But I've heard that he actually didn't have much tolerance in most of his writing for vulgarity.
Mm.
And these things are so crass. I heard somebody describing that as really like his version of pornography. You know,
yeah.
Like he really needed, that was his kink, was saying all these dirty words. But he describes the dirtiest, I mean, for lack of a better term, it's like fart porn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his thing. And that's what he was describing in so much detail.
And that's become bigger in recent years, too. I've never heard it credited to James Joyce personally, but maybe it needs to be.
Yeah. Well, and I could see that's the sort of thing that if that's your kink, there's probably some embarrassment around bringing that up. And that's the type of it's the type of thing I feel like categorically you're more than likely to get a hard no on.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that when fart porn became big, I don't remember when that was, maybe 5-6 years ago, and I don't remember who made it big, but I do know that when it first came out, I was like, oh my gosh, no one's into that.
Yeah.
And now it's like all these people could come out and be like, oh yeah, that's totally what I've been into. And then there have been some other people who are like, I didn't know I was into that until someone gave me the idea, and now I am. Same with clown porn, same thing that like when, and again, I'm forgetting who to credit here with the guy who was first came to some play parties as a clown, and people told him essentially like, you don't belong here, get out.
Yeah.
And now clown porn is this huge thing.
Huh. Boy, I didn't know about that. I'm going to have to look that up
go
now.
Go Google that next.
And you should go Google cake farts while you're at it. Which is
I've seen the cake farts. Yes, that is a big
thing. Which is fascinating, because that's one of those things where I can like appreciate that as fodder. You know, I don't appreciate it sexually at all.
Uh-huh.
It's just hilarious, and I really want to show it. In fact, I showed it to a friend recently and recorded her reaction to it. I wanted to see her face when she saw that for the first time.
And it is hard to say with some of those things how much of the hits on those videos are coming from people who that's their kink, and how many because they are grossed out by it. Like with the whole two girls, one cup about 10 years ago. Now I'm dating myself. It was like, you know, one of the first real crap porns to come out that everybody saw, and people were not looking at it because it was their thing. They were looking at it for exactly your reason. They wanted to show it to their friend and see the reaction on their face, see if they were going to throw up when they saw it.
Yeah,
but there are people that's their thing for sure.
Yeah, and that's a great example of something to this day I've never looked at, despite all the lore around it.
You know, it's not really that terrible if you've seen a lot of porn
in
your life.
I'm just so afraid to look at it. And I, so I'm thinking this is the kind of thing that if my wife came to me and was like, listen, I've got this, like, I need to shit on your head thing, I would probably have a really hard time. with that.
Well, and that goes back to your earlier comment about seeing somebody with play piercings in their leg at a mm-hmm. party, is that you can't control that visceral reaction. Mm-hmm. And even if you're talking about something much more tame, for example, one of my clients the other day was feeling really guilty that he's attracted to average weight women and that overweight women don't do it for him. Mm. And he himself is a little overweight, so he feels hypocritical. Mm-hmm. But you can't do anything about that. It's not what turns him on. Overweight women don't turn him on. Right. And in a more extreme example, you know, seeing blood run down someone's leg or mm-hmm. having someone crap on your face yeah. doesn't turn you on. It makes right. you want to barf, and you can't change that. So how do you sensitively deal with your partner's kink and yeah. try and be present for them and vulnerable for them when you're just like, but we can't do it. Because right. I'm going to throw up.
Right. Well, and hopefully in a scenario like that, I hope my response to that would be like, this is so far beyond my boundaries mm-hmm. that you can definitely go do that with someone else.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm really not mm-hmm. threatened by that because it's so yeah. far outside of things.
That's a good point. And so it's sometimes when it's more, just for example, dominance and submission, there's a whole gradient of things that could mean mm-hmm. and it can definitely get into your ego strength if your partner, for example, says to you, Ben, I really want you to be a serious dom with me, and you're like, I don't think that works for me, but it mm-hmm. is kind of my thing, maybe, that you feel less than if she finds that in a powerful way with somebody else.
Yeah, right.
But you don't feel that way if someone else wants to poop yeah. on her head.
Right.
Go for it.
Yeah, it's such a different thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is... There really are like some intimacy implications to this stuff.
Yeah. So say more about like intimacy and pooping on someone's head. Is it intimate? Is it outside your context for intimacy?
why am I so hypocritical around that specific stuff? You know, like I don't want someone to fart in my mouth.
Yeah.
I don't need that. And I don't, maybe it's like such a hard boundary that I'm willing to lose the relationship over it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm so confident
that's not going to be your
that
thing.
It's not going to yeah. work for me.
But it's interesting we're bringing up farts and poop, yeah. that those are the hard edges,
yeah.
and they often are the hard edges for people. But I was recently listening to someone talk about how in most animals, humans included, mm-hmm. our genitalia is pretty closely linked to or is the same as our alimentary canal, our yeah. mouths, our anuses, yeah. where we pee, all that stuff. And so it makes sense that it would be closely intertwined with sexuality, at least for some people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always said anal is the Lord's plan B.
That's a good one.
There is no coincidence in that proximity, right? That is yeah. like, this one's dangerous, this one's not. They're right there.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that there's probably, and we are trying to do a show on butt stuff pretty soon, but I think it's something that most people, and I think maybe nowadays we're finding it much more acceptable for women to admit interest in anal.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of hetero guys have always wondered why they were interested in it, myself included. Like, mm-hmm. why is that so exciting?
So what's your answer?
Is it the taboo of it? Mm. Is it the challenge of it?
It?
I mean, like, mm-hmm. the literal mm-hmm. logistics of it yeah. can be okay. challenging.
Uh-huh.
I think in my experience, I really pride myself on being the butt whisperer. Mm-hmm. Like, anybody that resists the idea of doing that because they had a bad experience with it,
uh-huh.
I can talk them into enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I think awesome. I like that challenge on some level.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of stuff to say around this.
And I do think on the dark side of it, and I heard a comedian say this in a more funny way once, but mm-hmm. that a lot of guys like it because women don't like it.
Oh,
because
certainly.
There's pain involved and there's definitely a dominance yeah. involved and maybe a greater or lesser extent of consent.
Yeah.
And
That's
so I don't, I you know, every person's different, but I
right.
think that probably is part of it, at least for some people.
Yeah, it's just like taboo. It's like more mm-hmm. taboo than other stuff for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, to your point, it seems like a totally natural progression.
Mm-hmm. And both sides of that alimentary canal. So anything around the mouth is also
right.
a big turn on for a lot of people in different ways. And I've been coached by gay guys who swear by the fact that if you're having anal, to have something in the mouth, because
oh,
that
yeah?
helps open up the anus
oh,
at the same
really?
Time, and it changes the pleasure, it changes turn
Jeez.
On. So there's a lot to think about with that.
Well, this just turned into the anal show.
The anal show, yes. We'll
I've never heard that one. But that is interesting. I did not know that. Well, we sort of got into this idea that these hard limits that somehow
uh-huh.
are the kinds of things that are harder to bring up. I mean, certainly harder to hear that your husband wants to shit on your head, but also really hard to bring up, mm-hmm. really vulnerable to say that to your wife.
Well, and let's talk about something that's not as extreme, because sometimes a hard limit for a couple that comes to me is they don't want to do anything that even at all resembles consensual non-consent or anything dominant, because you know, for example, they're a good guy who has spent their whole lives trying not to be that asshole, and now their wife is asking them to be that asshole, and even if there is consent, it's really hard for them to turn that off and suddenly be that person. And sometimes it's because they're scared that they might like it. Well, and what does that mean about them?
I was just gonna say it's hard to not want to be that guy, and it's hard to experience that excitement that is triggered when somebody is struggling to get away from you in a consensual, non-consensual role play.
Yeah.
And I've been that guy, and that is like you come face to face with your morality in that moment.
And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of couples that this comes up for, they aren't exploring it together, is because the person who has not expressed their kinky desire is scared that they might like it. Mm. More than it's a hard boundary for them, they're worried maybe it's not a hard boundary for them.
Well, and I think maybe on that note, it's important to remember that if you're a male or a top and you do like that, that doesn't mean that you're going to end up in prison. That doesn't mean that you're a felon.
And in our culture, our porn-loving culture, we tend to put those kinkier desires off to the side and feel like they're this dark part of ourselves that we're guilty of. So plenty of people watch porn that they don't really want to bring into reality. And they watch it however often they do, sometimes compulsively every single day for a couple hours a day. And then they feel immediate shame and guilt that they watched it, and they put it away and they have their vanilla sex or no sex or whatever it is. And then the whole cycle starts over again. So to break that cycle and bring your kink to your loving partner, again, takes a lot of bravery from both parts, because we're taught to put it in a corner.
That's really the point here, I think, is that regardless of which side of this you're on, you're entering into vulnerable territory by bringing it up. And maybe it is safer to do that in a therapist's office.
It can be.
What do you tell couples, especially around the non-consent fantasy? That seems to be more common with women that I've met in the past couple of years than I ever could have imagined.
It's very common. Yeah.
What do you, how do you talk a couple through that, especially if that's a hard boundary?
Well, and oftentimes it's not the couple that comes to me. It's, like you said, the person who wants to bring it up to their partner and they don't know how. And sometimes all they really need is to sit in front of somebody who's a total stranger who says, "You're not crazy. You're not broken. Yes, bring your partner in, and we're gonna figure this out." And then they find the words themselves, and it's really not as hard as they thought. But they just need to take that first step of walking through a therapist's door and not having me shame them or judge them or be disgusted by them.
That's something I've always said, that if you meet a girl that's into that, good for you. You're a lucky guy. But you better never suggest that to a girl that you're into that. Like, it seems so much more dangerous for the guy to bring that one up. Wait for her to mention that one first.
But how sad to think, too, that so many couples go through life and maybe they both are into the same thing and they never talk about it.
Yeah. Well, and that was exactly my point with James Joyce, because God bless him for finding a wife
who wants to receive these letters, these handwritten cursive letters about farts.
Maybe the most amazing thing about it is hearing that she wrote the letters instigating his letters, that maybe she was the fart pervert writing these letters to him. That was getting him all worked up.
Wow.
It is a fascinating topic, I think, more than anything, because it's fascinating to hear that in Ireland 130 years ago, people were just fucking dirty and horny the way they are now. And that it's just not like...
They always have been. They always will be. It's just finding a new outlet these days.
Did you ever have that sort of sense growing up, or that... That perception that the 50s were innocent and that our parents were innocent in their generations and they didn't have the same sexual experiences that we had?
Yeah, I think I got pretty early on that was a big lie.
Yeah, you figured that out?
Yeah, because it seemed so unbelievable. You know, the Leave It to Beaver, whatever media that was out there. It seemed so unbelievable that it just couldn't be.
Yeah, I still am just realizing it, I think. You know, that they were... first of all, everything's been done. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Adam and Eve figured it out on the second day.
Yeah.
They figured out sex, and they tried butts and mouths, and, mm-hmm. you know, they probably tried to fuck the fruit that fell out of that tree. Like, they uh-huh. were, it's just the natural progression. It's like toddlers. It's like watching a toddler sort of figure mm-hmm. out their body. They explore everything. It's just sensory experiment.
And that's so often where the shame can start, is that, you know, little boy is having fun rubbing his penis on things, mm-hmm. and mom, not trying to be shaming, is like, you can't do that. We have guests over. We're all mm-hmm. having a dinner party. And that can start a whole spiral. So how to be sex positive with kids without necessarily sitting them down and talking to them about sex, but how to foster them being exploratory of their bodies, excited mm-hmm. about sensations and whatever direction that takes them, to be supportive of it.
Yeah, one of the things we've used, our daughters are 3 and 4. And fortunately, my ex and I are sort of very much aligned in the co-parenting front. But mm-hmm. Our rule is that your private parts are your private property mm-hmm. and therefore private. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay for other people to touch your private parts, but it's okay for you to do what you want in private. Mm-hmm. But just sort of emphasizing that there's no shame around it. It's just right. not what you do in public.
Yeah.
And that, for now, that's all we're really getting into.
Right. And of course, that's a healthy distinction to draw. And even that, we don't know how that ricochets in a particular person's mind, mm-hmm. that then that whole idea of privacy equals shame can come up at some point. Mm. And so just as a culture, I mean, obviously you can't have your kid going around and whacking off at dinner parties. You just can, and it's not going to serve him to right. let him do that.
Right.
But just the whole idea that sex is something that we do in the dark, sex is yeah. something we don't talk about.
Yeah.
That's exactly what leads to these places where people are married for a couple decades and they've never really talked about what they really like. Mm.
I think that's a good point. Do you have any sort of specific anecdotes to share about couples who have overcome things or maybe not overcome things and ended up separating over this kind of stuff?
Well, I have kind of a vanilla example that's popping into my head right now of a client that I see who's a woman, and she got married pretty young. And early on in their relationship, she kind of said, don't masturbate, don't look at porn. And now, years down the line, she's kind of exploring stuff herself. Mm-hmm. And she's wanting to open that up with him. And he's really kind of pouting. He's really grumpy that he's like, you told me not to do this yeah. 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And now you're saying it's okay and maybe we can explore it together. But I think that once he gets over that little temper tantrum, I think it's going to be really good for them. And it's so exciting just to see mm. that they are getting to a place where they feel confident in themselves and each other and willing to talk about things outside of the realm of just vanilla sex and getting curious about sex toys, getting curious yeah. about masturbation, getting yeah. curious about what their proclivities might be.
Well, and that's really the other side of all this, is that when you sort of come together, pun fully intended, once mm-hmm. again, mm-hmm. it really is an exciting position to be in your relationship. It's yeah. exciting to explore this new territory together, especially when you're both turned on by it.
Mm-hmm.
It can really be a positive thing, as scary as it is to come out with your kink.
Yeah, and when you consider how many women do not have orgasms from penis-vagina sex without other clitoral stimulation, mm-hmm. adding all kinds of different activities and fantasies and kinks into it can broaden the scope for two people, so that guy isn't feeling inadequate because I can never get my woman off. Well, mm-hmm. if you're trying some other things other than just straight vanilla sex, maybe you're going to have some fun and feel really good about yourself that you got her off in this really fun way.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of sort of machismo and power in that.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle a lot with whether or not wanting to make a woman come is submissive. Mm. Right? I mean, where does that fall?
Right. Yeah. And that's so cultural too. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in some African cultures, it's like it's amazing mm-hmm. and masculine to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's, in our white bread American culture, I'd say for the most part, it's not considered cool. Mm-hmm. And certainly we hear the cliche, a lot of going down on a woman is not okay in yeah. a lot of parts of American culture. That yeah. makes you a bitch or something.
Back to your point a minute ago, I thought I just wanted to mention that I think sometimes there are these power dynamics in relationships, like the woman who prevented her husband from looking at porn.
Mm-hmm.
Where everything we've discussed so far is sort of under this presumption that you can talk it out. And
yeah.
how often does something come up and it's just a hard no? right? And then,
right.
Because in some cases I was thinking, well, I mean, if you come to your wife with this interest in anal and she's not going to do it, mm-hmm. Maybe you can just look at porn, you know, maybe that's where right. you can get that out of your system. Mm-hmm. But if you have the type of relationship where you're forbidden from looking at porn.
Yeah. And that can be a big thing in relationships, that's cheating for some people, mm-hmm. particularly for some women, that porn is something that's horrible and dirty. And if you're doing mm-hmm. it, it means there's something wrong with our sex life, or there's yeah. something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with you. So that can be a first place to explore before right. even getting kinky, is where do you think porn should be in your relationship? Is it something you could ever explore together? Can you at least be okay with your partner doing it without it being a shameful secret?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe those are the warning signs, or maybe the better time to get into therapy about this stuff if you have the type of relationship that forbids you from doing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're never going to get to the point of fart porn with your wife
right.
if she doesn't
yeah.
let you look at porn at all.
And whether you're interested in things that are more vanilla or something really seemingly out there, mm-hmm. that's the main thing, right? Is to have a relationship that feels safe enough that you can be yourself, you can talk about what you want, and regardless of whether you end up doing an activity together or not, if you have that ability to be real with each other, mm-hmm. then your relationship's going to be happy and you're going to figure out the best route forward. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have that.
It's true. So what's the takeaway? Communicate. Don't be ashamed. Don't marry the wrong person.
All of the above.
Thanks for listening, folks. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Family Affairs.
Please subscribe.
Subscribe.
Please subscribe through iTunes and give us a great review.
Or you can go fuck yourself.
The sex therapist recommends that you do go home and fuck yourself.
Links to resources we mentioned in today's show can be found on our website,
smartstudio.media.
While you're there, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find me, Lisa Thomas, at Lisa the Sexpert on Twitter or onlinecouch.com.
You can find me, Jen Siegel, at Jen Love Stars on Twitter.
And I'm Dick Scurvy on Twitter. Dick Scurvy. Dick. By the way, if you have any questions or stories to share, please feel free to email us at familyaffairs@smartstudio.media.
The views expressed in this program are those of the participants appearing on the show, and not those of Smart Studio or its employees. Come back and see what we talk about next week.
Please tune in next week for another great episode.
See you next week. Bye.